When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing and context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Chris.
I'm Tim.
And today's special guest, we have Carson Lancaster. Did I say it right?
You said it right.
Yeah, you said it right.
Great. Yeah, you got it.
Thanks for joining us, Carson. Do you mind giving our listeners kind of a background on yourself and how you got started in photography?
Sure. I got a camera from my parents, like most people did, around age 10, 11. My parents were both creatives. My mother went to a photography college in San Francisco, My dad was a creative director in the music industry. So he used to do album covers. All of his friends while I was growing up were photographers that would shoot the album covers for him. So like my godfather, who's my main influence, is commercial photography. And he's been like my mentor for my career.
Wow.
Dream.
Awesome.
Dream.
Yeah. So I was blessed to have a lot of support and influence from an early age.
I think that's cool because a lot of times, anytime anybody says like, you know, in the arts and they do what their parents did in the arts is always like, you grew up around it and it, you know, you're like submersed almost versus like people who have nobody in my family is a photographer, which is fine. It's just, you know, I always find it fascinating when anybody says like, oh yeah, my dad was, or my grandpa was, or my mom or whoever. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I was definitely fortunate in that regard because my godfather had this really bitchin' studio that we would go to while I was growing up. Like, he was old school commercial photographer, so he would shoot product and then process his slides and black and white on the spot. So he had a dark room in there as well. So I can remember like dark room fumes from as a toddler hanging out there. Yeah. And he had this super rad cyclorama built into his studio, which is like a permanent seamless thing.
Yeah. Yep.
It's really, it kind of looks like a more severe quarter pipe. Mm-hmm. Like you're skating. And I just remember we used to have birthday parties there and he had this game we would play. He would give each kid a piece of gaff tape, and whoever could run up the thing and smack it highest on the wall.
Oh, that's so good.
What a fun game.
Won the game. So instead of pin the tail on the donkey, we would like slap the gaff tape on the cyclorama. Yeah.
That's the way to do it.
It was super cool. Man.
So I guess that makes sense for everything that you do now, especially with like the gallery. Don't you have a dark room? Is it in your house or is that at the gallery? Or I've seen videos of you doing darkroom work.
I have a gallery space in San Francisco, and in the back there's like a glorified closet that we turned into a dark room, me and a couple friends. And we have two enlargers in there and like a big sink. And it's just enough for one to two people. Two people's kind of pushing it, but it's a really cool thing to have. And I'm very fortunate for that.
Oh, yeah.
That's all you need, really.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I missed that when we had a different apartment. I moved. I've been living in this apartment for probably 3 years, probably four now. And the last apartment we had a spare bedroom or a bathroom that was completely blacked out. There was no windows in it. It was in the middle of the house, and it was the best for like that. I could fit two little enlargers in there and like trays in the bathtub. It was just so nice to, if I wanted to do that, I could just go do that mm-hmm. for an afternoon. But now I have to like hang a blanket up and do all this crazy stuff if I want
to,
you know.
Too much setup.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. So it doesn't give me an excuse. I have no excuse basically to not process yeah. film. So I never have film sitting around anymore. It's like, all right, you're being lazy. Go downstairs. Go downstairs, process your film. So very, very cool.
I love that. I wanted to ask you, how long have you had the gallery open now?
July will be 7 years.
Whoa.
Yeah. Wow. I was just thinking that the other day. That exact sentiment. Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't believe it. And so now we're trying to organize the 7 year anniversary show, because for anniversary shows, I just like to do friends who support throughout the year, who come to all the shows. We usually just do a big group show of, I think last year we did self portraits and we had like 30 different people.
Oh, I love that.
Just submit a frame photo, show up with a frame photo, it goes on the wall.
Now, how does that work with the gallery? Do you kind of just run like a monthly thing or a weekly thing, or is it?
So our Set in Stone is a first Thursday opening.
Okay.
Because we have an art walk in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So it's our guaranteed night to just have something. And it's good to have something set like that, because I've got a lot of different stuff going on. And sometimes I get a little lazy with the gallery. So it's like, and it's really just me. I didn't start it with a partner or a financial backer or anything. So it's kind of like an art school education. You get out what you put in. So
right.
There will be months where I'll dedicate it to rentals, and then I'll go travel. Mm. And so we'll have different pop-ups and things of that nature, which keeps it interesting.
How did it come about?
I was going to art school. I was in photography school. I was given a choice whether to finish or which would have required about $50,000 more in loans. Mm-hmm. And yep. That's when I decided that I wasn't going to finish
yep.
and just start a career in commercial photography. And I started assisting and doing various stuff for random photographers throughout the city. And, you know, I was having a good time making a good amount of money, but I still felt this itch. Like, I wanted to be more fine art, and I loved my neighborhood, and at this time it was still accessible. This was a bit before, like right before San Francisco just blew into the stratosphere mm-hmm. as far as expenses go.
Right.
And I was able to procure a location for like dirt cheap. Like my yeah. rent for a two-story spot when I first started was like $800.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's like two floors, dark room in the back, and endless possibilities.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And wow. I was also fortunate that it was a family-owned building and not a company. So they were really cool with a long-term lease at the same rate, which is pretty much the explanation as to why I'm still operating.
I was going to say, I hope you're still locked in. Jeez.
Yeah. Totally locked in. And yeah. So the gallery has always been a passion project, but has been an avenue to meet so many people and from around the world, and it's just been a total blessing.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. Congrats on 7 years.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think our former guest, Bob Price, I think, did he show there? Is he showing there? I feel like Bob's...
Here, this is my to-do list that I was just writing before we started, which is to prep the walls for Bob, who's
yes.
coming in a couple days to hang his first show, and he's ecstatic, and we're super yeah. excited. He's such a good dude.
He is.
When is it going up? Maybe I'll try and come see it.
It opens on Thursday.
Oh.
Yeah. As a yeah. first Thursday in April.
Okay, but it'll be up for the whole month?
It'll be up for the whole month, yeah.
No promises, Bob, but...
Yeah, I was talking with him. I was like, man, I wish I could be there. And he's like, I wish you'd be there too.
Yeah.
I was like, ah, man, I'm stuck in the middle of the damn country
right?
all the time. Jeez. I think it's funny, like everywhere has a different first. You have Thursday, we have first Friday, and then like downtown Nashville has first and no, they have second Saturday is what it's called there. So that's pretty cool because you can hop on like both of those here mm-hmm. in the area. And but I just love that. I love that towns are doing that and being involved with art and giving a, you know, a voice for people in local areas. I mean, that's all you can ask for, really.
Yeah. I watched the video of your gallery, and you were talking about how, like, I mean, we've talked about it a bunch on the show, but like printing, you know, screens are temporary and like a print is forever, and the importance of like, you know, hanging art on the wall and having a place for that. So I think that's really great.
Certainly. Yeah. That video was done with a Danish photographer friend of mine who I met through the gallery, and now we're like lifelong buds.
That's awesome.
It was really well done. I was like,
3 days he shot that.
Flying in,
I
was like,
wow.
Drone shots.
And we recorded all the audio in an hour in a closet, just drinking beer in the middle of summer. It was great. It was a great experience.
Man, yeah, that video is so good. I think it was the video he did with Joe when Joe, where was he at? Like Sweden or something like that. I forget where Joe went, and they did his ether mm-hmm. work. And then you were in the recommended feed, and I remember seeing that was years, like, I don't know, 2015, 2014 or something like that.
I think it was 2 years before the filmmaker's name is Jonas.
Jonas, yeah.
Really awesome dude. Couldn't recommend enough.
Yeah, those are really great. I love those videos.
So, Carson, do you still do, are you primarily commercial work now, or?
I do a little bit of everything. so besides the gallery, and then I do the Find Rangers Camera Club.
Yeah, we want to talk about that too.
and then me and a bunch of other friends work for a photo booth company.
Oh,
that
cool.
Actually, Joey Reddy hooked me up with
yes,
years ago.
Joey.
Oh yeah, awesome and, cameras.
And it was, during his, he interviewed me for his podcast, and we did it in my dark room, and that must have been like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And he was up here in San Francisco working for this company, and he just said, like, in between, he's like, hey, I think they're opening a San Francisco office. You want a job? And that's pretty much how I went from there, and I was able to, from there, like, hire a bunch of friends and...
Cool.
I just get to hang out and work interesting tech events and parties and stuff like that.
What
so
kind
between
of a
like
photo
Google,
booth?
It's like a GIF booth with like a printout. It's like it's an interesting side hustle.
Yeah.
So like
whatever
yeah, between
works.
Yeah, between the gallery, sporadic photo gigs for myself, the Find Rangers, and yeah, I think that's about it. That's how we pay the bills.
How did Find Rangers all come about? Like, I'm definitely a huge fan of that Instagram as well, and the concept.
We in the beginnings of the gallery, within the first year, we had a pretty good, strong community of photographers who would hang out, and we just started meeting and showing each other's work around a table, and then from there,
I love that
assembled
too.
A group zine. Like the first one we did was just friends basically. And then it's kind of a sad story because, you know, as the way San Francisco goes, people move and people branch out. So like of the original three or four members, like one friend moved to New York, one friend, I don't even know where the hell he is. The third friend, passed away.
Mm.
And then it was just me and I sort of, instead of doing a, like, meeting up and having that, like, tangible print thing, it kind of went digital, which is kind of an interesting mm-hmm. transition for it. So that's when it became primarily the Instagram, and which was interesting in itself because we get submissions from, like, all over the world now. Like, St. Petersburg
Whoa.
And Auckland and Jakarta and all these insanely crazy mm-hmm. places. And just to think that it started off as five friends drinking shitty beer and looking at photos was like such a cool thing. So now it's basically like I run it and just post to the Instagram. And then once we get the open call or submissions, bring in like whoever's available, whatever friends are around, we'll sit around and go through like 500-600 submissions. And by the end of it, your eyeballs hurt and everyone hates each other. Yeah. And,
how does that process work? Do you like print them out or do you?
We blast them on a projector.
Oh, okay.
And we sit semicircle and do like the old thumbs up, thumbs down. And then like cull those into a folder and then kind of like whittle it down from there. And usually it's nice to give it to like, well, I like to give it to guest curator.
Right.
That way the heat doesn't come back on me.
Right.
It's like, why didn't you choose my photo? Come on, you're my friend. Like, I submit. Like, well, we do it anonymously.
Yeah, wasn't me, not my fault.
When we put the photos up, you don't see the names attached to the files. It is purely the photo.
Uh-huh.
So even if we've had it where someone in the semicircle had their photo on the screen and everyone's like, this sucks.
Oh, no.
You're like, well, that's just it. Yeah, that's just how it goes.
I'd be like, forget you guys.
Yeah. But I love doing it, and we're coming up on our 20th issue, and I'm super stoked about that.
Did you say 20th?
20th.
Wow.
Man.
Yeah, so open call right now is for issue 19. So all those out there, please submit your film photos to findrangers@gmail.com.
I was going to say, please plug it. Yes.
Please submit.
How does that work? Do you just, is it random? It could be anything, right?
Any film, any format. I used to do themes. We used mm-hmm. to do like, okay, people, or I tried to get really abstract with it, and then you just don't get any submissions. People are too self-conscious about like, I don't know if this is going to work, I don't know. But if you just tell someone like, send us your film photos, you get some really interesting stuff.
Now,
really, really cool stuff.
From that, do you try and make a theme, or do you just kind of...
Sometimes something will emerge and you'll be like pleasantly surprised, but it's only through the eye of the beholder. So, it's never like once you get the photos there, then you decide a theme, because that's kind of a cop out. Like you said, open call, anything goes.
Right. True.
So, another interesting thing is I do the layout with my dad, which is a cool, like, father-son bonding situation, because he, like I mentioned before, he was a creative director.
Oh, he's perfect. Right.
Yeah, exactly. So he's used to like, hey, will you change this? Like, will you do this? Like, oh, this is like this and this and this and this. And so it's fun to be able to like bond with your dad over stuff like that.
20 years going too. That's great.
Mm.
How many copies do you make when you do those then? Do you have like a limit that you do?
We do, like, it depends on how broke I am. It could
Makes
be
sense.
Anywhere from like anywhere from 100 to 250. I think 250 is the biggest run we've ever done.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and then those bigger runs, you kind of sit on stacks for a while, but they always seem to go. And that's why I'm fortunate to have the gallery, so people can come in. It's like, hey, do you have issue 15?
Oh, that's cool.
I'm like, no, but I appreciate you asking.
Oh, okay. But stay tuned for number 19. Yeah, exactly.
That's so cool. Like, we always talk about doing something like that with the podcast.
I was just
going
to say, Timothy, we have to.
I know. At least once a year, like, you drop something like in the summer or
like,
something. You know.
Yeah, like open call and just
I'm sure you would get a great amount of stuff.
I miss doing the, we used to do like, what were they, like Flickr challenges?
Yeah.
Not challenges, but you know, we'd give like a theme and people would post photos and stuff. It was a lot of fun, but it's a lot to manage when you, on top of everything else in life. So it just got out of hand. But doing it like once a year would be cool. Like just the same thing, get people to submit a bunch of stuff and then kind of just go through
it. Yeah, kind of what you're saying, how you got a bunch of submissions from like all over the world. We did a holiday 4x6 print exchange, and we're so blown away by people just everywhere, like Denmark and Japan and London, and every email we got that was like somewhere crazy like that, I was like beyond blown away.
It's such a it's so cool, basically. It's just so rad to like be connected using the analog and also, you know, the advantage of the internet to like connect all these different people. Yeah, it's so cool.
The best part.
Man, I've been dying to know. We were talking about this before we started, before you hopped on. How do you do those photos that are like, they're like a double exposure or something where you have one image, the same image on top as it is on the bottom? Is that in camera or are you doing that in printing?
In camera.
Okay.
Handheld. It's just something. It's just something that it evolved from. I used to shoot one of those holders with a pack film back on it.
Oh, no kidding.
Instant back. And I would take a photo, usually a flash, because it was such like a low speed filming. It's like FP100. So I'd like use a flash and then twist it and then shoot it again. And I was really good at lining them up, like really good at like getting these like perfect compositions. And so I set out to find a camera that would kind of replicate that. So like anything with, like a view camera shutter where you cock the shutter and shoot it or something like that. But I wanted like a roll film. So I looked at the Mamiya 7.2 with its multi little lever, multi exposure function on the back.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem was that when you shot it again, the film plane moved just a little bit. Like it wasn't perfect. So you would like shoot it and then cock it, and the film, it even says like discretion, like the film plane does like slightly move. So I had to search for a camera medium format because I wanted quality and able being able to like enlarge it very, very, very large. and I found one in the Bronica RF645, which is this like, it was, I think it was Bronica's last film camera they ever did. It was a rangefinder, super, super cool. And I heard about it from my friend Bellamy, who does Japan Camera Hunter.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
He had recommended it when he saw that I was doing that. And he's like, you know. And I looked into it, and it has this multi-exposure button on the back. It was all electronic. So you press it and just cock the shutter electronically. And without any sort of movement, you just invert the camera. And I was able to do that. And I kind of just went from there.
Man, I can't believe you're doing that handheld.
Yeah.
Because for a while you were posting them all the time on your Instagram, I think, or somewhere I was seeing them. And it just like, it reminds me of that, what the heck is that movie called? It was
Inception?
Yes, Inception. That's it. Every time I see this, I'm like, it's moving. Like, how do you even do that? Man, so that Bronica that you're talking about, that looks like a Mamiya 7, right? Isn't it kind of in the same shape of that? Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a little brick. It's a little more compact. Mm-hmm. And after I bought it for that, I started backpacking with it because it was small enough and compact, and it's kind of rugged and weather sealed. And I was really good at like I backpack a lot. It kind of like gets me out of the city and keeps the mind fresh. And I would had this really long strap on it that my friend made me, and I was really good at like shooting it and then lassoing it to my back kind of like wham, and just getting it and hooking it. Like, okay, I could keep hiking and this isn't too much of a pain in the ass. Perfect camera,
man. Yeah, you don't see those very often though. I don't think I've ever seen one like in person. I mean, maybe you see them more than I, but I have yet to see one. I just saw them online.
No, I've never run into another person with it. Because I think they were only in production for 3 years, two or three years.
Oh, wow.
And that was when, I think it was when like the Nikon D100 came. What was Nikon's first digital camera? It's like something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
When the advent of the prosumer DSLR came about. And like, I'm sure Bronica was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
We just put all this R&D into this camera. And it's like, it's so rad. And it's so perfect. But no one's going to want it.
Oh, man. That's just crazy.
Which sucks because can't find replacement parts for it.
Sure.
Nobody will work on it.
Yep.
Like, I broke my first one and spent months calling around to different places like Nippon and Bob Watkins at Precision Camera Works in Chicago, and all these, every like recommendation someone would send me, and I could not find someone to work on this camera. So then I just ended up buying a new one.
What do they run? Nowadays, anyway,
like you could get the kit on eBay for like $1,600 or $1,700. I was fortunate to find a body for $600.
Mm. Oh, nice.
Randomly, because the guy said that there was a fungus in the viewfinder. And when I got it, it was brand new, and I could not see what the heck he was talking about.
Oh, man, I love
what
that.
What a risk.
Yeah, it was. I rolled the dice, but it was like I needed to finish this project that I've been doing with those double exposed yoga poses.
Mm-hmm.
And like I have this idea for this book that I've wanted to do forever, but I couldn't do it with what I had. I just didn't have enough.
Right.
So I needed to finish it. So it was worth the $700 and have one more of many, many, many cameras.
Yep.
Too many cameras.
I know all about that. I had to change my whole office around from this podcast because I was like almost ashamed of how many cameras people were seeing behind me when we would do these interviews. It's like, wow. Don't look over here. Don't look over.
I have no shame. Mine are all right here in the back. So.
Oh, there you go. I've got a 8x10 Deerdorf on the floor behind me. So and there's just too much stuff.
So you doing that now? Are you shooting some 8x10, doing some large format?
I try to do some view camera stuff. I've got a really nice 4-5 setup and a really nice Deerdorf that I had a friend who was into large format photography when he was living in New York, and he moved on to beekeeping. And he says, hey, I got this camera in my parents' garage. It's just collecting dust. It's an 8x10. I go, oh, cool. Yeah. And then I go and check it out, and it's like this just cherry Deerdorf with a Fujinon 210 lens, like this beautiful lens, and a Nikkor 300. And my friend's like, that's the lens Alex self shoots with. So I've been trying to do that, but I am admittedly a lazy, lazy man, and that camera requires some. It's tough to shoot outside.
You're right, sure.
Any gust of wind, because it's basically just various pieces of wood held together with brass knobs. So,
did he give you a deal, or did he give it to you for?
Oh, it's on loan.
Oh, okay.
Until he asks for it back, which I know
you're babysitting.
He never will ask for it back.
It's kind of amazing how many. Like I was talking to this guy, he had a Sony. Like rig set up, and I just was like, oh, nice setup. And then he's like, oh, what do you shoot? And I was like, oh, actually, I shoot mostly film. I have a lot of film cameras. And he was like, film? You know, we talked about this on the show a lot. Like, what do you mean? That's a thing? And
you can still get that?
Yeah. And I'm like, yeah. And he was like, oh, I have a Mamiya 645 in my closet, and I have a Pentax. I never use them, just in my closet. I'm like, just in your closet. I was like, go home, shoot them. You go shoot them today. Like, stop.
The closet cameras are the best cameras.
Yeah. I should have been like, how much you want for them? I'll give you
$200.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I was 16, I was digging through. We moved, my mom and me and my older brother moved in with my stepdad, and I go into my new room and I'm digging through the closet and I find a Panon F8 wide lux, which is this like really cool 35mm. It kind of looks like it was like modeled after a Leica.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I knew nothing about it. And I asked my stepdad, like, what's this? He's like, I don't know. You want it? And so I shot with that for a while. So closets have given me pretty good cameras.
Yeah, it's the best.
So did you ever finish that yoga poses thing? Yeah, did you ever do anything with it?
I'm still going. I had an exhibition in Tokyo about 2 years ago.
Wow.
In a gallery in Harajuku called the Blank Gallery. And I kind of showed like the work in progress. I did 20 16x20 darkroom prints flat mounted onto the wall with like a sheet of glass and L screws, and loved it, and it was great, but it's not enough. So I'm still a work in progress, and it's on my giant board of photos back here.
Oh yeah, I see that. Like it.
So you haven't made a book yet?
No.
Okay.
It is in the works. I have a couple of book projects going right now that are ahead of it.
Mm.
One that isn't mine is My godfather, who I was talking about before, is like a mentor for me. He shot these photos in East Los Angeles in 1978.
Oh, my God.
He was a photo student at Santa Monica College, and his sister's boyfriend at the time was researching various gangs in Los Angeles.
No kidding. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And so he did like he tagged along with him. Godfather tagged along with his sister's boyfriend to go hang out with this Mexican gang in East Los Angeles called the Arizona Maravilla. And he went there for like the afternoon and hung out and took some photos and family portraits and some guys hanging out in a basement drinking old cans of Budweiser. And they left, and he went back to his like home darkroom and processed the film, made the prints, and went back by himself the next week. And these guys were so surprised that this dude came back. He was like, holy shit, like you actually came back, like, and gifted them prints of their families and like photos of them with their kids. And that was it. He was in. And they said, like, you come back and hang out with us whenever you want. So he spent the better part of 1978, 1979 going back every couple weeks and hanging out with them. So I have his negatives from that, that he never really did anything with. Like, he had a feature in LA Weekly at the time and then just became a commercial photographer, had kids, and didn't touch it because it was still like a, I guess the best way to describe it would be like those negatives were radioactive. Like they could get you into trouble.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, like
yeah.
This was still a gang. It was, there was a lot of like the graffiti and the tattoos and the like the lifestyle that, you know, you could have gotten yourself hurt had you done something with those photos. So he sat on them for years and years and years, and I pulled him out of his closet about 5 years ago, and I've been really just trying to like suss out the best way to put together like a really good hardbound monogram.
Wow.
So
how many negatives do you think there are if you had to ballpark it?
There's like 650 frames. And they're all, when he gave them to me, they were all in wax envelopes, you know, stacked.
Sure.
Yeah.
So each roll was like six frames each, stacked in six strips, like in a wax envelope. So I went through and put them into archival sleeves and made contact sheets. And now they're in like an actual, like archival binder.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting and staring at me every day of my life, telling me to do something with them.
Are they? I mean, they must be incredible. I can only imagine.
They are really beautiful. There's something else in it.
I would love to see that.
I know. Yeah, I can't wait.
You will.
Come on, Carson. Get to work.
Yeah. That's why I hung this huge piece of sheet metal behind me.
Yeah, so I love that too. That's great.
I made a bunch of work prints, and I've been sequencing them. And the thought process is like, if they're on this board, and I have to stare at them every day, something will happen with it. And so far it's coming to fruition slowly but surely.
Great.
So are you printing? Are you like darkroom printing, wet printing those?
The work prints, yeah. I just use like a 4x6 dye sublimation because mm-hmm. I went through when I first got the negatives and did like just some Epson flatbed V700 scans, you know, nothing humongous, but just enough to like get a good idea.
Yeah.
And then from there, I think I whittled the 600 some odd down to like 300. And so now I'm like slowly but surely.
Yeah.
Going through them.
It might have to be like a two-parter.
Yeah. I know. I'm still like, I know. I'm like, yeah, that's a good idea. Like, oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
So from what I've whittled it down to, I know that I don't want photos of the children who are in the photos.
Okay.
Because I feel like that's something that's like, that could strike a nerve. And
right.
You kind of have to like suss out what's offensive, what's not offensive.
Right.
Like the majority of the members and the photographs are guys who are 99% no longer with us.
Right.
But their children who are in these photos could have some sort of resentment attached to them. Like my dad was a piece of shit and he was a, you know, he was like, he kind of like set me up for blah, blah, blah. And like, I'm just trying to view it through the eyes of them.
Right.
Because I've been in contact with some people who are actually in these photos.
Oh,
and I'm
no
trying
kidding.
To talk cool. to them and really suss it out because I'm just the godson of the white guy who shot the photos.
Right.
Of
right.
This, like yeah. this like really intensely like influential Mexican gang. But it's interesting yeah. to see the how like so many subcultures have spawned off of that, you know, be it like the lowriders, the fashion, the tattoos, the graffiti, just the emulation of the culture, which has been kind of like spread everywhere. So it's
yeah.
really interesting to see like where it all kind of started.
Yeah, and what a time era. It's the 70s. Like,
yeah.
I had
so. It'll be something, I promise. I will.
Yeah, I was
going
to say, it'll be worth the wait. It's going to be worth the wait.
I will have something really, really cool to show you.
Man, see, that's, again, like, why I love this stuff so much is because, I mean, look, you have a body of work sitting there that your godfather shot, like a time capsule,
mm-hmm.
just waiting to be, you know, like, that won't be forgotten, you know, like, kind of just like how I shoot pictures here in Franklin all the time, like... Eventually, when I pass it on to somebody who works in like the Heritage Foundation or something,
mm-hmm.
and just be like, here's a decade's worth of photos of this town. Like, I don't care what you do with it, just do something with it. Cause, you know.
Yeah. And it's also been cool to like I was saying, I do the Find Rangers with my dad, and that's a cool
yeah.
way to bond and like,
mm-hmm.
you know, work together on something that we're both proud of and interesting and keeps going. Working on this with my godfather, who is like, my influence, like my main influence
mm-hmm.
on photography, who unfortunately has onset Parkinson's now.
Oh, no.
So I'm kind of like, I really want to make this happen for him. Cause he started as a documentary photographer, but became like a pretty, reputable commercial photographer, which is a completely different
mm-hmm.
realm.
Yeah.
You know, it's so he's never had a book.
Sure.
And nothing would make me happier than to like put that book in his hands.
Yes.
So that's where I'm at right now.
So it's definitely going to get done.
Yeah, by June.
Okay.
Oh man.
Yes. That's there's a San Francisco art book fair that I'm hoping it will be ready for to release, and then have corresponding shows, prints from the original negatives. At the gallery and then down in Los
wow.
Angeles as well.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I'm definitely, I'll stay tuned for that.
Most likely in Venice because he's based in Venice and Mar Vista. So we'll do something around there.
Venice is a great place for art.
Cool.
Anything else in the works or just not that's
Ooh.
Not an amazing, right? Like, any personal stuff?
Yeah.
Like just you?
I did a project a couple It was last year I went to London and had this exhibition on the Lost Coast, which is this like ongoing thing that I'm trying to like suss out now where like I mentioned, I like to backpack a lot and
mm-hmm.
I had spent a lot of time on this stretch of coastline in Northern California that's a fairly popular backpacking trail. But for that project, I went with my brothers, my two older brothers, and we're kind of in different parts in our life. So it was nice to like come together and take this trip together. And so that was just sort of documenting that trip that we did. And I'm trying to expand it to more of the Northern California coast. So I don't know, really, really out there, many ideas. I also wanted to do this project about eucalyptus trees and the effect of eucalyptus trees in California. That one has been like, when I was a kid, a eucalyptus tree, I grew up for a couple of years in Malibu, and we had a eucalyptus tree fall on our little ranch house, and it just like smashed through the
oh,
ceiling.
No.
And like, ever since then, I've just had this like fascination with eucalyptus trees.
Oh, I love that!
Yeah,
I love it.
And they're invasive to California. They're an Australian tree that were brought
mm-hmm.
over.
Yeah, I didn't even know that there were eucalyptus trees in California. That's crazy.
They were brought over by this guy named Abbot Kinney. And Abbot
there
Kinney,
you go.
There's a street named in Venice for this guy, Abbot Kinney, who was he was looking for economical gain in these trees. He's like, I'm going to bring these trees over and everyone's going to make stuff out of them and it's going to be great. and then they bring them over and they completely underestimate this tree. Like, it spreads like wildfire. They're incredibly, they're incredibly flammable. They're not stable. Their root structures are flawed.
Wow.
And you can't really work with the wood unless it's an old, unless it's an old growth tree. Like these things, they were cutting examples in Australia when they got this idea, and they're like, "Oh, this wood's great. This is amazing." And then it turns out like those trees were like hundreds of years old. So these trees that are growing in California, like the wood's all knotty and super crappy.
That's nuts.
So now they're primarily used for wind breaks on like agriculture land, like but eucalyptus trees.
That's wild.
And I have a story every time I'm down in at Abbot Kinney. I'm gonna be like, let me tell you about Abbot Kinney.
and his flawed trees and why
flawed trees he brought here
everywhere.
That's so crazy that they're abrasive like that. It's like bamboo. You know, you plant one thing of bamboo and it just like takes over an entire forest.
And not one living thing in California can eat them.
Sure.
No one can digest it. If you burn it, it gives you a crazy respiratory rash if you breathe it in. Like these trees, like they kill them.
Oh man, I'm so glad you taught me that tonight, because now... That's a good laugh. I mean, it's sad and it really sucks that this tree is just like, you know.
But it's not all bad. People love eucalyptus trees. They smell good.
They smell great. I love the smell.
Dude, they have that one plus side of
They smell good, and they are good for wind breaks, I guess. But they also spread like crazy, and they're invasive. So
yeah,
crazy.
Wild. Man, I can't wait for that project too.
I think the koala is the only living thing that can.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
Process a eucalyptus.
They should have brought those over here. You should have brought those too.
Oh yeah, that would be great.
We'll be right back with a listener question for Carson right after this message from our sponsor.
Support for Analog Talk also comes from Polaroid Originals. Go to PolaroidOriginals.com and use the offer code AnalogTalk10 at checkout to receive 10% off your next purchase.
All right, guys, this is a part of the show where we break off and take a question from one of our listeners. And Mr. Chris Visser, you're killing it lately with these questions. And he sent this one in, and it is, what is the biggest challenge about owning/running a gallery? And there's a second part of it, and it says, what's the most rewarding?
That's a great question.
Yeah, I really like that, too.
The most challenging is relevance. Staying relevant, staying cool.
Yeah.
Which is damn near impossible. So I would say like it's hard to stay cool, and it's not really possible. So it's just about doing what you want to do and kind of sticking to your guns and your passions in the first place, because you're not doing it for money. Let me just tell you that right now.
Yeah.
It ain't about the money. Never was, never will be. Mm-hmm. It's about giving people an opportunity and showing work that you feel passionate about. And I'd say like Bob Price is a good example. Like, you guys know Bob.
Yeah.
Like from far away, you've never met him, but you can vouch that he is a good dude with a solid heart.
Yep.
And is like enthusiastic and is a credit to the medium in his enthusiasm and, uplifting others. So
100%.
When I offered him the show, like, he was so excited and so stoked and like positive and excited, and like that in itself is worth it. Like giving that opportunity and like, you know, seeing someone run with it is pretty much does it for me, you know? Yeah. I just love that. Like opening night when people come together and get like your community together and people looking at photos on a wall, it's like, it just does it for me.
It's gotta be the best. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's in the low parts, you'll forget that. Like if you're short on rent or like if it's a rough month or like, people wrote some bad reviews or you get some bad press or, it's like, it's hard to see through the fog like that. And there's quite a bit of fog in San Francisco. What was the second part of the question?
I think you already answered it. The most rewarding.
Yeah, kind of. Most rewarding.
Yeah, 7 years.
That's nuts.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Man, we had like a ramshackle building down in our main Franklin, Tennessee. I don't know if you know anything about it, but it's like this. I think it's like the eighth wealthiest city in the country or something. It is very like celebrities own houses here, and it's kind of like a mini I don't even know what to call it, but there was an empty building for the longest time, and the downtown like association here was just like, something needs to be put in this building. Like, we cannot have an empty rundown looking spot on our prestigious street. And I was like trying to contact people, because I was like, man, it'd be so cool to do like little pop-up shows in this empty building, you know, mm-hmm. like while there's nothing in it and nobody's using it, let me do like, you know, kind of like what you do. Like on First Friday, we'll get like three photographers or a photographer and an artist and a band and serve wine and do like fun stuff. And they're just like, oh no. Oh no. It's just, I was like, what? Like, come on. Like, that would be such a hit down here. Like, people are so hungry for something like that. And it was just nuts that, you know,
that's disappointing.
Yeah, it was such a bummer, man. So hopefully someday something fun happens where I can
put together something like that. Just pitch it again and be like, let me just hear me out.
Oh, it's like a Chico's now or something.
Oh,
now.
No.
That like
Dang.
That middle-aged woman clothing store. And it's just
it's a shame, because they probably just wanted to see dollar signs, you know?
Yeah. That's what I said too. I was like, even if we, you know, whatever profits we can give you, we'll pay, you know, give us a number and we'll see if we can make it work. And I mean, it's just for one night of the month. It's not like I was trying to, you know, have something daily there or whatever. Yeah. But
you should have pulled a James Cameron.
Yeah.
You should have. Did you ever hear that story when he was he was pitching Aliens in like in a studio, like a studio meeting, and he's got a whiteboard, and Ridley Scott had already made Alien, right?
Uh-huh.
So he and they needed to like renew the copyright. So he's like, James Cameron goes up to the whiteboard and he writes Alien and then writes an S. and then draws a money sign through the S, and it just like walks out.
That's amazing.
Like showing people like, oh, there's money to be made here. Then they'll that's pretty much it. I just wanted to use that reference.
That's a great story.
No, that's so good, because it's sad but true. Man, all right. So we also do the second half of our listener interactions is they always ask our guest what their desert island camera would be. Like, if you could only choose one camera
forever,
you're stuck on an island.
Yeah.
Like what do you got? What you taking with you?
Well, it's interesting, because like, how big is a desert island, right? So you don't really have to worry about like portability. So there goes your like compacts and your around the neck camera. So that's not really an issue. I would go with the Mamiya RZ67.
Oh, nice. Beautiful. Yeah. I love that camera so much.
It is a tank. I went hiking with it last week and would not recommend.
No, not the best.
Hurts the neck. Beautiful negatives. And I love the ability to rotate the back.
It's all about that rotate.
And the 110 lens on it. I got mine the same week that my friend Jonas, who did the documentary, got his, and we've been like going back and forth saying we both have the same lens, and it's like, this lens is so beautiful. The 110-28 is like, yeah, it's doing it for me. It's really doing it for me.
I've never shot that camera, but I've been getting more and more intrigued.
Do you know, are you familiar with Nextdoor? The app, it's like a neighborhood app where you can so-and-so's watering their plant 3 a.m.
Yeah.
Screw them. my friend lives in Topanga, and he hit me up like a couple months ago. He's like, hey, this person's like selling this camera. I guess a tenant moved out. Do you know anything about this? And it was the RZ67. And he's like, he asked me, should I get this? Like, I want something smaller than my Hasselblad, something that I could hike around with and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, don't do it.
No, that's the wrong one.
I like went through my day, and this sort of happens to me. It happens to anyone who has like gas gear, you know, gear acquisition syndrome. So, damn, that thing was only $400. It's just sitting there. Comes with all this cool stuff. And I just remember I'm like eating a burrito and then I just like frantically text him like, I want it.
Yeah.
I need it.
Did you get it?
Oh, yeah. This is the one. I went to visit family. Yeah. It was a necessary purchase.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I don't know if you... I mean, I could see you getting into that camera, Chris, but it's like it's half big. Your size.
I know. Yeah. I'm small.
It's studio camera.
Yeah.
It is a studio camera. I took my my brother, his wife, and their newborn to the poppy fields.
And
you know, where everyone has been destroying poppies for the last couple weeks.
Oh, yeah.
And we did the hike to the top, and I had this thing with me because I really wanted to, and I don't shoot color at all, but I wanted to shoot.
I was going to ask the question I was going to ask you.
I wanted to shoot a roll of portrait of them because their kid is like 3 months old, and I just really wanted this photo of like them in poppies, not in poppies.
Yeah.
In front of poppies. And so I went and shot like one roll of portrait, and that was like the first roll of color I've shot in like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, wow. I was gonna ask you, like, is it just straight black and white, huh?
It's just straight black and white because that's what I can do,
right? Know?
Like, I have friends with Jobos and who process their own stuff, and old Bobby Price has got his little sous vide machine doing his color processing, but then like I don't like just shooting it and scanning it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I want to go in there. And even if I don't, like, even if I shoot a roll of black and white and just scan it, at least I have the option to, you know, go and make prints. Even if I'm, you know, too lazy to do it, like, I still can. So I can't, like, color's always been a push and pull with me.
So I mean, that's kind of awesome that you, like, shoot it, develop it, and then, like, print it.
Yeah.
Like,
that's
your workflow.
And it also speaks to the whole, like, no room for laziness, being that I have the dark room. It's like, all right, you lazy bastard, get in there.
So cool. Stuff from.
I really need to get my ass back in gear with the whole but enlarging.
Even the action of, like, you were saying, you have to set it up, like hang the blanket and do it. Like, that's enough to be like, I'm going to read this book instead.
Right, yeah, exactly.
I'm going to do any number of other things right now
than make
these prints. But
that was the best part of having that second bathroom was just like, man, I'd just walk in there. You know, I'd get a little thought in my mind of like, man, I wonder what this looks like blown up, you know, 11 by whatever, and like get to work and spend a day printing a shot. And it was just so much fun. I really miss it, but it's so inconvenient, you know?
Yeah.
Someday we'll all have nice dark rooms set up in our house. We just open the garage door or something.
Yeah. Instead
back
of
room.
Two cars in every garage, it'll be like one car and a dark.
Yeah, exactly.
What also helps is that I have friends who use the darkroom. There's like 3 or 4 of my friends who help out with the gallery, who I bequeath a key to them. And
with
that
nice.
Key, they are allowed to come and go as they please and use the darkroom. So if one friend's coming in to print a portfolio or process film, as he's leaving, he's like, hey, you lazy bum. Like,
I want to come down and hang out, make some prints. Yeah.
I've got this like fixer. Like, I don't want to like just dump it into the receptacle. Like, why don't you use it? Or like, I've got just a little bit of Rodinal left. Like, why don't you get in there and do it? What are you sitting on? What do you got? I'm like upstairs just like reading a book. Like, you're right. You're right. Okay. So it's good to have that like support group.
Sure.
Which,
even if it's not
like Find Rangers anymore of us, like we also used to do a critique, the last Thursday of every month. It was just open call. We would open the doors of the gallery, set up 2 folding tables, get some crappy Domino's pizza, and send out an email, like a big group email. And whoever, we would determine who was showing that night, usually 3 to 4 people showing a project, be it work prints, a slideshow, whatever they had. And we were doing that for a couple months, and it starts to get draining. So we like would take a break, but I got to start that up again.
Yeah, that's such a good idea. I wish
that one again.
It always bums me out. Like, I feel like I'm on a little island here because I'm like the lone. I'm not from here, so I don't really have that like hanging out for decades group of friends that shoot photos together. And they're out there. Like, I know people that live in this area that I respect their work and love what they do, but I just can't bring myself to hang out.
Yeah. You gotta set up like a little meetup, little hang, little shoot and print night or something.
You can stop being a lazy.
Yeah, use the web to your advantage, man. Right?
Yeah,
I'm sure you're a block away from someone who is just wanting to hang out and drink a beer and look at some prints.
100%. I have one in mind right now.
The print exchange program. I should have mentioned that before, but this was a print exchange started by a friend in San Jose, California, and it started between him and another friend. They were both skate photographers for Thrasher, and one sends a 4x6 print as a postcard, and it was like a whatever happens, happens postcard, not like, I mean, a print, but not like wrapped up. And
right, yeah. Right.
I mean, like a stamp on the back, Sharpie on
that.
The back.
I love those.
See what happens, happens.
And you would get, so that was going on for a couple of years, and I met like a ton of friends, and we still exchange. Like, I met most of my friends from Japan by doing this, so by sending prints overseas, and you just get such cool results. And I still randomly get prints in the mailbox, and I will say there's nothing better than getting a piece of mail that isn't a bill, a jury summons, or some, like, you know, penny saver. Like, when you get a postcard, it's rad. And when it's a print, like a friend's photo, even better.
Even better.
So that program's still going on. If the listeners want to take part.
Oh, yeah. I'm probably going to try and take part of that, too.
It's just search the print exchange program, Film por Vida. And it's started by this guy, Jai Tanju, in San Jose years ago. And he ran a gallery in San Jose that is on hiatus now, Seeing Things Gallery. But all cool things, avenues to really cool people.
Yeah, I'll put a link in the show notes for that.
Yeah. Do you print them on the darkroom postcard?
Yeah. Not specifically the paper. Like, I'll do the Ilford postcard paper. But
yeah.
Writing on it, because it's RC paper, writing on it's a real pain in the butt.
Oh, sure.
It really is. Yeah.
It smudges and it's kind of stupid. So I usually end up just doing, I'll put like white gaff tape on the back writing on that or
a sticker.
Fiber paper. You can just write directly on the paper because it doesn't have that resin coating that smudges.
Cool.
Man.
But I like the idea of the postcard paper because it has the lines and the little place for the stamp.
It's perfect. Yeah, perfect. Yeah.
But that's where the practicality ends because you can't write on it.
Man. I did a cool little thing where I had a buddy, he's like a, I don't know if he's like a singer. Yeah, he's a singer in a band and he also does like poetry books and stuff. And I did this postcard series zine. It was pretty cool. I hand printed, I think it was like 12 photos, and on the back, like, of the, you know, you'd flip the page of the zine and it would be the postcard side Xeroxed with his like little poem or something on it. So it was pretty cool. We did a little like split zine thing for a show we did together. Like, his band was playing our the little first Friday spot I was at. So I was like, oh, we should throw this together real quick. So I just crappily, poorly printed these postcards. I love those, though. Those little Ilford postcard things are great. But it was funny because that you say that about the RC, because you cannot write on it. Like, you just totally, especially being left-handed. Like, I'm left-handed, so I just like smudge the crap out of everything that I write on. I just remember being so devastated about that. Like, oh, come on.
Of course.
Do you know Bill Daniel? Are you familiar with Bill Daniel, Tri-X, Bill. Noise?
I don't think so.
You would dig it. He would shoot like punk shows and a lot of freight train graffiti and like,
oh, nice,
stuff like that. I think you'd be into it.
Bill Daniel, right in there. There is a second part of the question
that
we didn't get to. All right. So, okay, we got your Desert Island camera. Is there anything that you're like looking at that you're lusting after? We call it the white whale camera.
Dude, no, I bought every white whale camera.
You have everything?
Oh, all right. Best all right. Answer. All right.
You know what the last
best
white
answer.
Whale camera was? This was the last white whale camera.
What's that? Is that an M4?
M6.
M6, nice.
And I bought it because I'd always wanted one, and a bunch of friends around me got them, and my one friend overpaid for like a minty brand new one for like some ungodly amount. And one came to me that was reasonably priced, and I went for it. And I said, okay, I got the body. but I am not going to pay money for the lens. I have to trade a camera.
Oh, okay.
Lens. So I had a Hasselblad 500cm that was, it was my mom's, but she let a friend borrow it in 1992 and never saw it again.
Oh my goodness.
So with the advent of Facebook, she gets a message like 2 years ago from that friend saying, oh, Kathy, it's so nice to see you, blah, blah, blah. Guess what? I still have your Hasselblad. I never even use it. I'm gonna send it to you. So she sends it back to my mom. My mom has no interest whatsoever in shooting film.
Sure.
And she sent it right to me. So I had this like mint 500cm beautiful Hasselblad. And I already have a 503CX, which is, it was a gift from my godfather. It was his studio camera when he went digital. So I already had the Hasselblad. And I said, like, okay, I'm going to trade this for a 35mm Leica lens. And I did. I did a straight trade for a, Summicron 35mm. And now I have a Leica. And I think about selling it every day.
No. Keep it.
Man.
I don't know. I like medium format. What can I
say? I do too. I'm really stuck on it right now.
If you're printing, man, there's nothing like, even a 6.45 is like just the quality, man. The quality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And now with the 6.7, it's like, okay, whoa.
Yeah, right.
Whoa. You know.
Man.
Because I like sheet film. I like shooting the 4.5. It's a cathartic process of meditation and really thinking out every step, but it's a pain in the butt.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally a pain in the ass.
I mean, I am admittedly a lazy person, but I also like to go. I like to walk. I like to move. And like, you know, it's like my Ansel Adams popping the platform on top of my Buick, looking over, getting every shot. I want to move, man. I got two feet and a backpack, and I just want to go. So,
oh yeah,
that's where I appreciate what is the 6.45? You get 16 shots, which is a good amount for a roll of film. 16 is a good amount.
The perfect, like 16, 26.
You get to get it out of the camera.
Yeah.
You're like processing it. That's even a half day if you're going. You know?
Yeah,
it's like a half day of shooting. 36.
It's too much. I agree on that.
Dude, I've been down with 8. I've been shooting this 6x9,
and
8 is perfect.
Yeah,
I can shoot a roll a day shooting 8. So
seriously,
I've been doing all right with that.
And then you're processing.
Yep.
I've got some instant film that's probably just so expired now, but I gotta shoot it. Some old 6.69 Polaroid pack film.
That's the best.
Some Polapan and my film refrigerator crapped out on me when I was in Mexico last week, and I came home to like a big pool of water underneath it. And so luckily everything was sealed, you know, in the foil packets and you know, 35mm canisters and everything else, but like, you bastard.
Man, I just had the same thing happen like a month ago. Yeah.
So now I'm keeping my film stash in a big bag in the fridge. You know? I had to go through and like take out every box because all the cardboard was wet, but it was safe.
What a bummer. Take
every box and like dry everything on a towel and you know, and I'm like, okay, this could have been avoided with this bag. This high-tech piece of Leica technology. This anatomic carbon bag.
I just did it to keep them all together. I didn't even think about practicality of like if the fridge breaks.
I never thought about it.
That's true.
I never would imagine that. But yeah. And that's what that little drip tray is for under the like in a mini fridge, which can only handle so much.
That's true.
Yeah. I couldn't believe how like my mini fridge just took an L like hard. It was running great and I got it for super cheap. And I had it for probably 3 years, and then it finally just took a dive bomb.
Yep.
And same thing happened. It was just soaked on the bottom. But thankfully, I'm like super anal with all my film that I put all my medium format like all the same film in one bag.
Smart.
Mm-hmm. In a Ziploc bag and have them kind of just there so I can pull them out and take them when I need them. And they were on the bottom. So luckily nothing got too messed up. I did ruin a couple boxes of the FP film, but again, they're in that foil wrap, yeah. So they're fine.
Just the pretty green box.
Mm-hmm. All right. And now they're taking up less space, so it's okay.
R.I.P.
Well,
yeah,
this has been
fun.
Yeah, this was fun. Thank you for joining us.
Of course,
Carson, this has been
a great time. It's nice talking to you guys.
Yeah, where can everybody check you out?
Check out on the various Instagrams. Mm-hmm. There's a mine, which is just my name with an underscore, Carson_Lancaster. There's a Book and Job Gallery, all one word, Book and Job Gallery. And
Finder, great name, by the way.
Thank you. It was I'm happy and surprised you didn't ask me why I named it that. So we'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll leave it a mystery.
Yeah.
The ye old website, CarsonLancaster.com, with some of that yoga double exposure stuff and the Lost Coast project and some of the other stuff. And stay tuned because I hope I will have this homage to my godfather, East LA gang book out by summertime.
Yeah, I can't wait for that.
Hardbound, in tune, and on time.
I'm so excited about that.
I appreciate the support and the enthusiasm. It's what I need.
We'll definitely push it out for the release.
Very cool when it comes
around. Timothy, where can everybody check you out?
Guys, just head over to Instagram and Twitter. I'm at Timothy Makeups over there. I make film photography-related YouTube videos. Those, just go to the search bar. Easiest way to find it is just typing in Timothy Makeups on the search. And I always forget that I have a website. Carson, you reminded me of having a website. But I'm in the works of kind of revamping it right now. I had some sort of internet security issue with it. Somebody had nabbed my password and... so that's all changed up. And then I was like, oh yeah, I have a website. So that's just timothymakeups.com. Chris, where are you?
I am Chris B. Photo on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. We are Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram, Analog Talk Pod on Twitter. And we have a Facebook group and a page you can join and like on Facebook. And I have a website as well, if we're doing that now.
There you go.
It's my whole name, ChristineBartolucci.com. Yeah.
Sweet.
Carson, thanks again. This was awesome. Great time chatting with you.
Thanks for having me.
All right, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. First off, we want to thank Carson for being on the show. Guys, in the show description, in the show notes, I'm going to list all of Carson's links for his Instagram and the Book and Job Gallery. I know we didn't say the name of the gallery at the beginning of the show, so it is Book and Job, and it is in San Francisco. I'll leave the links in the show notes, so go check them out. Check out his work. Give him some love. That's going to take us to the Patreon. Guys, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. We have a bunch of fun stuff over there. We're doing live streams. We're doing after shows. There's a whole bunch of perks. You can get an 8x10 signed print from Chris and I. Just a bunch of fun stuff. So all the Patreons that help support the show already, thank you guys so much from the bottom of our hearts. And for all the newcomers, guys, just head over and check it out. See if there's something over there that you might like. And yeah, we'll see you next week. Later.